Welcome to Straight Outta Crompton. I am your host, Laura Crompton, and I'm coming to you this week live from our new house in LA. Guys, we made it. We're here. We've done it. Apologies for the radio silence. I mean, to say that the last 3 weeks have been busy is beyond an understatement. I've been meaning to record the podcast multiple times. I've arranged interviews and sat down to do it, and then something else has just cropped up, but I will be more diligent now I'm here and now the move is out of the way. So please bear with me for that. And if you haven't had a chance to listen back to some of our back catalogue, maybe now's a good chance to binge the earlier episodes where I didn't even know if I was going to get here. So goodness me, it's so rewarding and frankly quite surreal, the fact that I'm actually here already. It feels like there's almost too much to share this week. So I'm going to do a whistle-stop tour, I guess, of how things have gone. And the overarching headline, I suppose, is that they're going brilliantly. Suspiciously well, almost. I'm waiting for the proverbial shit to hit the fan at some point, and I'm sure it will. But for now, it's been great. That's not to say that it's been easy. The week before I moved here was incredibly difficult for us. Not only moving out of the house, which was really stressful and way worse than I was anticipating, actually. I know they say it's one of the most stressful things that you can do in life, but I generally don't get stressed, and I can vouch for the fact that it was incredibly stressful. But also, it was sad. Sad especially for Devon. He was really worried about leaving his friends behind. Less concerned about moving here and more concerned about leaving there. And so there was lots of tears, which made me feel dreadful as a parent. You know, you don't want to put your kid through that. So we had lovely, lovely times. He managed to celebrate with his school friends on a couple of occasions. They gave him some wonderful, literally, gifts that will last a lifetime. You know, they made him a book. His classmates made him a book with all these letters. It was just honestly beautiful, but stressful and sad. And then we got here. We landed into a very cold and rainy LA where I had to convince Devon that honestly, it genuinely does get hot and sunny here. Like, look, there's palm trees, there's potential. Believe me, it's gonna perk up. And we rented this giant tank of a car and headed over to our new, very empty house in Studio City, which has brought challenges, you know. I mean, we had literally nothing. We had no beds, no plates, no nothing. On my third day, a friend came over with a bottle of wine and I was like, you're very optimistic. Not only do I not have glasses, I don't have a bottle opener. Like, what do you think this is? A fully functioning house? No. But you know what? Thank God for online shopping. Every day there are boxes and boxes of things arriving at the house. It's still very much a work in progress. Our guest room has currently been turned into what I am calling Box City, because it is piled from floor to ceiling with boxes. But we'll get there. You know, we've got the internet now, which is the main thing. We've got mattresses to sleep on. In fact, Devon's got a whole bed to sleep on. He's really pushed the boat out. So, you know, we'll make it work. It's great. What else have we been doing? Well, we met some parents from school, from Devon's school, because he's on spring break at the moment. He hasn't started school yet. And we went on a little park date with some parents from the school that he'll be going to. And that was great. I now feel really reassured about his school. I'm not going to lie, I was a bit worried. I was a bit worried because it felt big and it felt intimidating and it felt very different. But having spoken to these parents, who were frankly delightful, they all just absolutely raved about how excellent the school is. So now I think we're feeling kind of excited about starting. Today is Saturday. He starts in 2 days on Monday. So the proof will be in the pudding. One thing that I thought was very interesting, though, is that this group of parents was very, very LA. Of the lineup, we had a drummer, we had a session singer, we had a scriptwriter, we had a TV producer, and we had a casting director. And in fact, one of them told me one of the best spots to network for her is actually the school playground, which is a whole different vibe to what I'm used to at home, but I can't deny I'm really excited about it. There've been lots of small wins, you know, and then little things that in your everyday life would be completely inconsequential. But when you're in a new country, in a new city, they all just feel big. I mean, the day that I managed to get the rubbish out and the truck came and picked it up and I'd done it right. I got groceries delivered, and from Aldi, no less. That was a huge win. And filling the tank with petrol, I don't know why I was so nervous to fill up the car. Maybe because I have a diesel in the UK, maybe because I used to live in Mexico, and in Mexico it was a very different system where an attendant would fill up the car for you, but I pushed that car till it had about 10 miles left in the tank, and I was like, right, I'm going to have to do it. It was fine. I did it. We survived. We also made the most of the fact that we live in Studio City, which is home of Universal Studios. So as of this week, I bought a pass, an annual pass for each of us. And yesterday, we headed on over to check out our new neighborhood theme park, which is, it's just insane that Universal Studios is right there on our doorstep. It was an 8-minute Uber drive. I took a taxi because the parking is apparently $30. So we spent $7 on a cab. And it was great. It was busy. We went on a Simpsons ride. We went on a Harry Potter ride, which was, I think, frankly, wonderful, apart from the fact that it broke down while we were on it, which slightly tarnished it. And then when it restarted, we just sort of sat there in the dark in silence. And then when it restarted, the ride started, but without the video. So I don't feel like we've seen it at its best. But we know the potential of that ride. And the great news is, because we have the passes, we can go again. Because I think you would have been annoyed if that was your only chance to go on it, right? There's also a new world there called Super Mario Land, I think, or Super Nintendo Land. And there was a 3-hour queue just to get into that area of the park. So we're yet to see that. But again, given that it opens at 8 a.m. and closes at 10 p.m. and we have these passes, we will, I'm sure, find a moment to go in the coming weeks. Also, Devon befriended the stepson of Nick Cho, who you'll remember from our third episode, Your Korean Dad. Nick's girlfriend actually used to live in Manchester, and his stepson was actually born in Macclesfield, which is insane. So Devon's been on a couple of play dates over at his house, and to get from our house to Nick's house, you actually have to drive through Hollywood. So our route takes us past Capitol Records, past the Walk of Fame, past all the palm trees of the kind of the edge of like Beverly Hills. And it's just, oh my goodness, really quite incredible to think that we live here. I keep referring to it as a visit or a trip. I don't think it's quite hit home yet that this is where we live now. But my goodness, I'm so excited. Anyway, enough about me, because I could really, really honestly go on and on and on. I would like to take a pause now and introduce you to our wonderful guest this week. He's really super interesting, and we have spoken to a lot of people from the entertainment industry, but no one really from the music industry. So I think this is a whole different take, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So I'll catch you on the other side. Andrew Furs is a music and live event producer with over 25 years experience in the live entertainment industry. He is a veteran of more than 20 reality TV series and live events productions in Australia, Asia and the US, including The X Factor, Australia's Got Talent and The Voice. He's also a music producer, songwriter, instrumentalist and musical director. And he left Melbourne, Australia for the bright lights of LA 9 years ago. Andrew, welcome.
Laura, thanks for having me.
Woo! What a long list of talents. Very, very multi-talented man. Tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words. Like, what are you doing now? How would you describe your occupation?
These days, I'm mainly in the studio. I am a music producer, record producer. I moved here with a very strong background in like indie rock and classical, which is a weird mix, and then hit LA, and I've been making pop music ever since. It's just something about the concentration of artists here, and I've always loved pop music anyway, but it's like it's really taken over. Mainly making records, writing lots of songs, a little bit of scoring for film and TV, but and then a lot of artist development stuff.
Speaking of being in the studio, the listener may notice a higher quality audio with this particular episode because we are in Andrew's studio. This is my first ever live interview in real life for the podcast. So thank you for lending us your space.
Absolutely.
Love it. Love it. So where are we now in LA? Where are we currently, and where are you based, and how did you kind of choose these parts of town when you came to LA?
Yeah. LA is a really interesting city because it's obviously so sprawling. It's so spread out. It's almost like Disneyland. There's like actor world and TV production world over in Burbank. And there's like, you know, and Hollywood's, you know, its own thing. And I kind of quickly realized that everyone in the sort of music side of production side of things was mainly East Side. And so I kind of gravitated to that side. And everyone who's out, you know, in tech, in what they call Silicon Beach, is out on the West Side. And, you know, and as nice as it is to be near the beach, all the cool dive bars and the venues and the studios were all over on the East Side. And so I naturally gravitated. So I started in East Hollywood, and I've just been moving further east ever since.
It's a sign of your success, the further east you go. And so you've been here 9 years. How did that come about? What inspired the move in the first place?
I was in Australia. I'd had a few different lives as an artist. I came up in bands, and I was fronted a band called The Inches, and we were, you know, signed to Sony back in the day, and, you know, doing lots of touring. And then I was also like sort of music directoring. They call that MD for sure. If I say that again, MD, that's what that means. Music director for a bunch of different acts, which basically means you head up. If there's a singer-songwriter or a pop act or whatever, you head up their band and hire and fire their band and put their show together. And I really love that. And then I sort of transitioned along the way into television. I just, bit of dumb luck, got picked up to be music producer on the first series of So You Think You Can Dance in Australia. And that just snowballed. I ended up doing a whole bunch of TV series as music producer on X Factor and all that kind of stuff. And that was great. It was an amazing job, and I met loads of different people and learned a lot. But after about 5 or 6 years of that straight, I wasn't actually making much music. I was, you know, in off production offices, and, you know, and there was definitely creative aspects to that role, but I really just wanted to get back to making records, but I felt like I was ready to kind of make other people's records. So there was a wonderful guy named David Bianco, who had been flown out to Australia to mix one of my band's records from LA. And he's a legendary guy, won Grammys with Tom Petty, and, you know, was Rick Rubin's engineer for 10 years, had extraordinary stories, just a beautiful, lovely guy. And I'd always kept in touch with him. And when I said, oh, I really want to start producing records, he was like, well, there's only one place to be. You have to be here. And I just sort of innately trusted that and started making moves.
Wow. And so had you spent much time in LA before then? Or
not really, no. I'd done a stint in New York, like just 9 months. And I'd been through a bunch of times with TV shows and, you know, choir tours when I was a kid and all sorts of things and band tours, but I never spent much time here. And I had people here on the ground, especially through television, music industry, people had teed up meetings for me and stuff and things like that. But and obviously this fabulous mentor really, really helped me. But I kind of thought, I think I mentally thought it'd be a piece of cake. I mean, I'd rocked into New York and instantly knew the whole place and had this wonderful time. And I'd done a stint in London, and I'd been in Melbourne and Sydney. And I was like, yeah, I've got this. I can rock a new town. And it very quickly proved to be the hardest place I'd ever moved to. And I'm sure you've heard that before, but, and in surprising ways, you know, like it's LA. I've always thought like LA has this thing where it'll kind of keep its foot on your throat for the first 12 months and it'll find ways to test you and see if you really want to be here. And it's different for everyone. Like everyone has their, oh, I got kicked in the ghoulies by LA, you know, story. And then after about a year, LA goes, oh, okay, you're still here. All right. Okay. I'm going to take the foot off the throat and like you can fly. But it's, deceptive because it's very, everyone will take your meeting, which is great. You can network your ass off and people respond really well to that. There's so many people to work with, but something about it being spread out and something about being difficult to put everything together and something about there's also a general flakiness of follow through. Everyone wants to take the meeting. No one necessarily wants to follow up. It's just difficult to get a stronghold in this place. And it's really just, yeah, till you build your network, it's a challenge. But for me, I loved it. It was like, it was the biggest challenge I'd ever had in my life, and I loved it.
And I think from some of the things that you've previously told me, there were quite a few kind of almost like pinch me moments when you first arrived, like celebrity run-ins and, you know, things that only really happen in LA. Like, tell me about some of those.
Yeah, I think I told you that I've been here 3 days and I found myself sat in a cafe bumping elbows with Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction and Red Hot Chili Peppers and whatnot, one of my guitarists I really love. Things like that, you just go, oh, this is very real, you know, and you spot celebrities out and about. I think early on, I was really lucky. There's a songwriter night in town, and the director of the whole thing took a shine to me, and he put me in the band. And he'd always have these amazing session players in this songwriter night as a backing band for the whole night. And so every week I'd rock up, and I wouldn't know who I'd be playing with at this songwriter night. And I remember there was one, you know, we were doing a little warm up, and the guys were incredible. I mean, they're all great, but these guys were like a cut above. And I was like, hey guys, hey, I'm Andrew, you know, we're just like, yeah, they're like, yeah, we're session players around town, whatever. But, you know, they'd been on tour with Shakira for the last 10 years and they, the bass player had been out with, you know, Ryan Adams and all these different guys. And they were just like really, really senior guys. And it was just like, it's in that moment, you just have to raise your game so high instantly. They're the best players you've ever played with in the world. And instantly you become better because you're in the room with people way better than you. And it's like, and that kind of energy like never gets old. That happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like even in the last week, just like the concentration of industry people, I mean, maybe for some people that's intimidating, or, you know, one of the things that I talked about, I think it was with Dwayne in the first episode, was, you know, people that move to LA who are, you know, the brightest star in their small town, and then they come here and they're one in a million. But I think for some people that is quite energizing and quite inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of world's best practice going on here, and it's a cool thing because it's elite, like the best producers and the best musicians, and they're all floating about here, the best songwriters, the biggest artists, the best managers, publishers, everyone, they're all here, agents and stuff. But there's also a sense that there's a room for everyone. There is room for everyone. And I think when you first come here, you swim about in a pool of maybe like a lot of wannabes or whatever, and, you know, just where you figure it all out. But once you get to a certain level, it becomes incredibly fun because there is just so many great people to collaborate with. And I think that's unique to LA. I don't think that really exists in any other city in the world, not for music. There's other musical, great music cities, but yeah, it's not the same.
And do you think the fact that you're Australian, so what was the biggest difference that you noticed being here versus being in Australia?
The biggest one was I thought I knew how to write a song. I thought I knew how to write a pop song.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been doing it all my life and written tons of songs, and I thought I knew how the cookie was made and the sausage got factored. And and I think I was also mildly suspicious of, like, you know, the way some sort of pop factory, you know, thing. But I thought, you know, I sat there and either wrote one with myself or I sit in the studio and write one with someone else and with an artist or something. And then I got here and got up close to like how world-class pop songs are written, and it was utterly fascinating. And there's like this division of labor in terms of like the lyrics and the melody and everything that you sing and how the beats and the track get made. And there's usually three people in the room, and when it hums along, it's extraordinary. There's a whole bunch of, I didn't know this, but there's a whole bunch of songwriters in LA who don't want to be artists, don't want to be producers. A lot of them don't even play instruments, and some of them can't even sing. And they are earning extraordinary money as, they call them top liners, but just like guys and girls who are just really, really good at capturing the zeitgeist of like what, you know, 12 to 30 year olds, you know, like the language, the cadence, the rhythms, the melodies of what's hot right now. putting it all into a song in an original way, and then sitting with an artist and a producer like myself and basically helping that all come together. And they won't have opinions on the beat, or not strong ones anyway, but like you'll sit there and I'll make tracks and feed them things, and we'll be in songwriting sessions. And I just thought, you know, that was something, a song was something you toiled away at, you know, for weeks or whatever, or maybe inspiration hit you like McCartney yesterday and you woke up with it in your head or whatever. But I there's like a methodology it's still extremely creative and incredibly emotional and incredibly connected. And once I tapped into that, I was like, oh, this is how this gets done. And it was a massive light bulb moment. I was like, oh my gosh, no one in Australia does it like this. And it's once I tapped into that, I sort of fell in love with it. I was like, oh my gosh, I just want to do more of this. So yeah, it was a massive difference.
And why do you think they don't do it in Australia? Is it a budgetary thing or?
Yeah, it's like I mean, if you go to Nashville, they do it different again, but
okay.
Yeah, it's definitely like a pop thing. Yeah, it's a budgetary thing. It's a cultural thing. It's like a, I think now what I know now is that all the great top liners in Australia are all in LA. So there's like,
right.
There's literally
there's
not a lot
left
of,
to do it.
Not a lot of people left around. The bank's a little empty, but.
Do you think the fact that you're Australian, or that you're not from LA or not from the city, I don't know, or not from the US, factors in the way things have panned out for you? I mean, is it an asset that you can leverage here or no?
I think LA and New York are very international cities. I think, you know, people in LA and New York are used to absorbing people from all around the world. I think the novelty factor, maybe 20 years ago it was a novelty being Australian in LA, but I think that I blame the actors.
Mm-hmm.
I think, by the time the seventh Hemsworth has landed in West Hollywood, you know, and you go to Vons and there's like Aussie accents all up and down the aisle. But I think people, there's a weird thing I found when you come here and you're like a newcomer and someone might introduce you to someone or say, hey, he's a big deal in Australia or whatever. And they really want to meet you because everyone's really keen to find the next big thing. It could be a scriptwriter or a music producer, or whatever, songwriter, whatever. People are like, oh, okay, you're a new shiny thing. Okay, cool. I definitely want to keep my eye on you. And I think that's cool. But yeah, but it's other than that, it's a melting pot.
But you recently played at the Australian consulate, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, is that like a community? Is that a network? Or was that just kind of a one-off?
I mean, there's an amazing Australian community here. I mean, it might be the third biggest behind like Armenians and Koreans.
And Brits, surely.
It's about on par. There's
really?
120,000 Australians in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow. I think that might be higher than Brits. I think it might be 70,000.
It's extraordinary. I mean, like every single person in film and television who's wanting to spread their wings from Australia is here. Every single actor in Australia, almost, I can't believe there's any left in Australia, is here. And a tons of, you know, musicians. And it's all of that kind of stuff and tech and everything else. So it's just, and it's a really cool community. Like everyone, you know, it's like the Brits thing. There's the Facebook groups and the, you know, and people get together for the Australian grand final and, you know, football grand final and all that kind of stuff. But, so it's pretty supportive. It's good when you first move here for sure.
I'm really keen to hear about your insider tips of places to visit in LA, because I feel like of all the people that I've spoken to, you know, officially on the podcast, but also kind of casually one-on-one, you're the one that has already in the last few days hit me with more recommendations, more spots, more like, yeah, and places that I wasn't familiar with. I mean, I feel like, I don't know if this is like the beauty of being kind of this, in this kind of sweet spot of being an expat, so you can still get really excited about the city. It's not your city. It is and it isn't. You've been here long enough to know it well.
Yeah.
But it's still fresh and it's still exciting. But
I think I get excited to share my LA. Like,
right.
Like and if you met someone else, especially if they were living on the west side in Malibu or, you know, Santa Monica, they'd want to share their LA. And it'd be completely different to mine. The things they'd recommend, the places they'd take you to, the vibe of the bars or the restaurants would be different to what I'd show you. And I think I like that about LA. It's almost like I split the city in half. there's this bohemian east side that has a ton of galleries. Like, LA's got actually, LA's had this bad rap forever. Like, the New Yorkers forever would be like, oh, yeah, we've got the culture and the food and everything. And over in La La Land over there, they're, you know, they're getting fake boob jobs and bronze tanner, and they don't know how to dress themselves, and it's sunny 24 hours a day, and it's, you know, it's, and everyone just talks rubbish. And it's been funny over the last 10 years as New York has become, I think, way more generic and way more expensive. There's been this huge exodus of, like, especially artists, musicians, literally all the record labels, this exodus from New York to LA. And there's this, like, thriving arts community here, but it's very split down the middle. There's not a lot of galleries on the west side apart from, like, the Getty or whatever. There's not a lot of live music venues anymore. All the ones up and down what used to be the, you know, the Sunset Strip, you know, rock and roll legendary Motley Crue, they're all kind of, they're kind of naff now and just for tourists and stuff. And then all on this side, there's all, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people unkindly call it like the hipster area.
Mm-hmm.
But it creates this very different LA. I could take you out on two nights and take you down to Rodeo Drive and all these incredible bars and clubs that you're probably celebrity spotting and very, very zhuzhy and Maseratis everywhere. Or I could take you out on a bunch of nights that would be the polar opposite of that and feel more like, you know, Portland or Melbourne or, you know, somewhere, or even like East London or whatever. And it would feel very indie and bohemian and artsy and cool. And the people there would all feel like that. So it's kind of like, yeah, there's a few LAs to discover, I guess.
Yeah, I see. I mean, Devon and I have been driving around a lot in the last week, and just driving from neighborhood to neighborhood. I mean, you can almost tell where you are without looking at a map, just the way it looks. It looks completely different from one part of LA to the next.
Yeah, that's why I say it's like Disneyland.
Yeah, it's like the themed.
You are world. Currently in hipster world.
Got it. So here in hipster world, what are the top attractions that I should be queuing up for here at my hipster Disneyland?
At hipster Disneyland. Yeah. So Highland Park is where I live, and it's just a little bit further east than, like, you know, Silver Lake or whatever. On the east side, it's 10 years ago, it was a great place to join a gang, you know, find yourself in trouble. These days it's, you know, it's where Billie Eilish grew up, and it's got great record stores, and, you know, it's cool. It's sort of popping off. There's a lot of great restaurants and bars have opened up in the last 5-6 years, and the Dresden is in Los Feliz, which is a great old neighborhood on the edge of Hollywood, and it's a bar where Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. and the entire Rat Pack used to hang in the 60s. And they had a booth, you know, permanent booth there. They just never updated the decor, so it looks exactly like it did in 1963. And up until recently, and I'm sorry you missed it, but Marty and Elaine were a jazz duo, husband and wife jazz duo, who started playing there in about 1979, 1980. And they had the world record for the longest running residency. They were there 3-4 nights a week, every week since 1980.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it's like, what was it, a 40-year residency? And unfortunately, Marty died recently. So they retired. But that place is amazing. Grand Central Markets is really fun. Mm-hmm. It's really good. You know, it's a fun lunch hang. There's some good bookstores. I love the Arts District. There's a ton of galleries and good music venues that have opened up.
Is that in downtown?
It's just past downtown. Yeah, it's kind of effectively downtown. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then around Highland Park, there's like old vintage movie cinemas which still only have one screen and do midnight screenings and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of stuff, you only kind of get it in LA.
Yeah. See, I do like, you know, like the La La Land version of LA, like the retro oldie. Yeah. Yeah, cinema era. Love it.
Yeah. Well, you put that many cinema files in one city and you're going to get some pretty fun screenings and fun things and one-offs and everything. And lot and tons of outdoor cinema. I don't know if anyone's talked to you about that.
The last episode, the guys were recommending some rooftop cinemas.
Yeah, rooftop cinemas, and Hollywood Forever is my favorite.
In the cemetery?
In the cemetery. So you go there and it's like full of like old 1950s movie producers and stuff, and there's quite a few stars, but you walk through it all and then there's a big field, massive screen, and it's great fun because you go there to see like True Romance or Pulp Fiction or whatever it is, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Ghostbusters, whatever it is, some popular cult movie, And tickets go quick. So everyone who's there on their picnic basket, and people come in with like full, huge picnics of like, you know, a massive charcuterie boards and kegs of beer and stuff all on wheels, you know, and that all comes in. And then the movie starts. And then because everyone's a super fan, you know, every time someone gets on screen, there's applause and people are yelling out lines. And if there's a song, everyone sings it. And
oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. I don't think that really happens anywhere else.
There's a guy that works for my company, but in the French office. He actually worked in digital marketing at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, where his job was to record video obituaries of people before they died, so that after they died, people could like QR code them off their graves and like watch video conversations with these people from beyond the grave.
That might be the most LA thing I've ever heard.
I mean, what a job. He was a French guy that just came over to do that for a year.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I actually want to get him on the podcast. We want to find out a bit more about that. So maybe he'll do that soon. What do you dislike about LA? What would you change about it if you could?
I mean, the really obvious one, and this has come up in my time, is the homeless factor. It's confronting. It's pervasive. It's there's no, yeah, it's, there doesn't seem to be like the city has any real solution for it. And I think especially if you come from the UK or Australia or Singapore or wherever, you've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. It's used to be confined to small sections of LA, and now it's kind of citywide. But it's that's a tough one. You know, and along everything that comes along with that, safety and the pandemic was really horrible for that. Sometimes you can forget that you're in the richest country in the history of humanity, not just right now, not just in the last 100 years, in the history of all humanity, no country has had more wealth than America. And when they want to do something, like when they want to do it, when they put their shoulder into it as a country, as a government, as just a society, as general people, if they want to beat the Nazis and win World War II, they'll do it. They'll do it. They're just incredible. They'll make 100,000 planes in a month. But then I'll come here and be like, why is the minimum wage $9? And why is health insurance $400 for the no coverage at all? And all this sort of stuff. And everyone looks at you and they go, well, we can't afford it. And you're like, I think you can. It's just that you just spend a third of the budget on, you know, something else. So there's that. But I mean, like it's, you take the good with the bad, you know, like for me, I'll overlook a lot of things because of the extraordinary amount of opportunity for me. I really wouldn't have the opportunity I have in any other place. But it can be, you know, especially over the last 7 years, it can be a tough watch. A really tough watch. And I'm a very political person, so I try not to turn your podcast into NPR, but yeah.
One piece of advice that you would give to someone thinking of moving here, and it could well be someone looking to pursue a career in music, let's say.
Yeah. I would say, I think a lot of people here, actors, musicians, come here to put the feelers out a little bit. They might do a 3-month stint here, and I would say that's next to, I mean, it's a good thing to do just to get a feel for the place. Nope, nothing wrong with that, but it is next to impossible to get anything done here without being on the ground. Mm-hmm. I've seen people try and shuttle back and forth between Australia and the UK, and no one here responds very well to that. They just think you're kind of half stepping. So I would say it really does take 6 months, 12 months on the ground here, committed to kind of get anything moving. And I think some people go home with their tail between their legs, probably haven't followed that through to the nth degree. So just be prepared to, you have to be really patient because it takes a lot, it takes longer to do everything. If it took you 2 weeks to get a driver's license in London, it takes you 6 weeks here. If it takes you, you know, if it took you a day to do your chores or run around your errands, it's going to take 3 days here. If you lined up a bunch of meetings and you wanted them all roll out in a couple of weeks, it's going to take you 2 months. Everything is going to take longer. It's going to take you longer to get through. Things get pushed back. You have to be very, very patient.
Because people are flaky or?
Yeah, they're flaky. They're busy. People will change. It doesn't take much for people to you know, flick things back or, you know, push you back or whatever. And yeah, some of it's the like LA is legendarily flaky. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
Oh, I've experienced it already.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, I'm sure I've been flaky myself where if someone invites you to a gig cross town and you're like, you know, if I was in Melbourne, I'd be like, yeah, cool, see you in 20 minutes. But the thought of driving, 45, 50 minutes in both ways in traffic to Venice to see a 40-minute set or whatever, and you're just going to go, oh, God, it's just a bit much. And you sort of, find yourself sticking a bit more to your little area, but which is, I think, a bit of a trap too. But, yeah.
But just quickly circling back to the advice. So, I hear you and I agree you, and it's not the first time I've heard this, that you have to kind of come in, you have to be patient and you have to be tenacious and you can't expect everything to go your way at once. Given how expensive LA is, that's surely quite prohibitive for people that want to come and make money. I mean, it's so expensive to live here versus, I mean, for me anyway, coming from the UK, it feels very expensive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're a musician, you're probably pretty experienced in poverty.
Right.
You've probably done it before and you'll do it again. I mean, yeah, no, you definitely have to come here with savings and you will burn through them real quick. For sure. But I think, the other bit of advice, the good advice is, especially for Australians and Brits, is you have to not just kick off your natural cultural cringe, that tall poppy, oh, we don't talk about ourselves, we don't big up ourselves. It's massive. I remember coming here and I was seeing someone early on and they were doing their best to help me. And they'd take me to industry events or whatever. And they'd introduce me. They'd big me up. They'd go, oh, he's Andrew. He's this amazing music producer. He's kicked ass in Australia and he's fresh in town and he's really incredible. And I'd do the Australian thing. I'd go, oh, no, really not. like the thing you'd naturally do in Australia. And they'd look at me and go, oh, you're not. Okay, cool. And walk off. And I'd be getting kicks under the table and everything. It's like, at first I resented it because I was like, oh my God, this town's full of wankers. Everyone's just sitting there. You'd meet someone and you go, hi, I'm Andrew. And they go, hi, I'm Steven. I do development over at Atlantic. And then I do this and this. And I just signed this band. And you go, I didn't ask for your CV, mate. Like, right. What's all that about? And then what I realized was it actually works perfectly because I can maybe help him. He can maybe help me. And we've just met. And if he just word vomits
his elevator pitch
straight at me, all over me, and I do the same, we can very quickly figure out if we can help each other. And the willingness is there. And it's not that he's trying to big himself up or be anything more than he is. It's just efficiency. And it's the juice that makes the whole city work. And if you just get used to that and embrace it, you can expand your network, find a bunch of people who can really help you, and you get things done. And but you have to lose that cultural cringe because we're so wired not to do that. It's fascinating. We're so wired not to big ourselves up.
It is fascinating though, and it's useful information. And I think once you shake the ick of doing it, like you said, it becomes quite efficient and yeah. But yeah, we don't like to big ourselves up too much, and we don't like to hear it from other people.
Yeah.
Andrew, what are you doing now? What are you working on at the moment?
I'm working on a couple of records. There's an awesome artist, Dolly Avenue, who we've had in development for a while, and she just signed a record deal, and she's about to come out with her first EP, so we're finishing that up. Got another artist, Max, who just signed to Glassnote in New York and finishing her record up. And then like a lot of writing stuff. So I have a lot of writing camp situations in our studio where anywhere up to 3 or 4 producers and 6 or 7 writers will come over a weekend and the artist and we'll literally come up with 10 songs in a weekend. And that's really, really, really fun. It's like in sports, like All-Star Weekend where you get the best players all on the same court, whatever, and you mix it all up and see what happens. And that's a lot of fun. So we've got a couple of them coming up that I'm really excited about. And then, yeah, there might be a bit of touring later in the year. We'll see. But I try to stay home these days. I try not to go on tour anymore.
You are a very busy man in a lot of demand. How can people follow you or find out more or maybe even listen to some of the stuff you're working on?
We've got our production company's called Tag Music. So we are tagmusic.com. And I'm on Instagram, Furzy Music, F-U-R-Z-E-Y.
I will put it in the show notes. Find it there.
I had to learn to say Z. It was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
I've said Z my whole life, you know. Yeah.
Well, our British and Australian listeners will understand the Z. You're good.
Nice.
Perfect. Well, this has been an absolute delight. It's so much. I mean, we've got kind of the microphones in our faces that I can't fully see your face, but you're a real life human being. You're not on a screen. And it's wonderful to be sat here with this amazing equipment and just in the center of all the action in the music scene in LA. It's very exciting. So thank you for letting us step into your world for a day and for joining us on the pod.
That's a pleasure. We're really happy you're here.
So I think what Andrew was very coy to mention, because I know he said that he's got into the habit of elevator pitching his CV, but he was very, very coy about the fact that in that very same studio where we recorded our podcast episode this week, just 48 hours prior, he was recording a track with Brandy. I mean, it's so LA, right? I just love it. So I think that's all from me this week. I don't know if you'll have noticed on my Instagram stories, but I've actually now got a slot on BBC Radio Manchester every Friday evening on Stacey Copeland's Late Show around 11:30, where I share my LA diaries. So if you want a bit more of a fix and also a very weekly regular piece of content, because I'm aware that this one took 3 weeks to get out, then do head over to Stacey Copeland on BBC Sounds on Friday evenings and you will catch my LA updates from there. For now, we are heading out to a pool party, sure, ahead of Devon starting school on Monday, so I'm sure there will be a lot to report back on next time we catch up. But until then, have a wonderful one, enjoy the Easter break, and I'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care.